A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The light's probably gone.
So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 57. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are talking about three adaptations of ghost stories by M.R. James. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
Well, as you can tell, this is a little bit of a change of format for British Invaders. We are talking about three separate TV films. They're all short teleplays based on M.R. James' ghost stories. So I don't know if they're strictly ghost stories, but they're all about the supernatural. And all of them were done at different times and in some cases by different networks. So they vary quite a bit.
That's right. And M.R. James, as we'll discuss, a very, very well-known writer of British ghost stories. And he was the inspiration for these three films we're going to talk about. The earliest of which we'll be discussing was called Whistle and I'll Come to You. And that was a BBC film from 1968, which was broadcast in their Omnibus Arts program.
That was in black and white. We have to cover something in black and white when we're talking about ghost stories like this, I think.
Absolutely.
We will also be talking about A Warning to the Curious, which was in color. It was just a few years later, from 1972. And it's also spooky, but has quite a different feel to it.
And then the third adaptation of M.R. James we'll talk about was called Cast in the Runes, and that was on the ITV network in 1979, the most recent one we'll be talking about in the main part of our discussion.
Yes, and that one has quite a different feel to the others, and is also quite an interesting one to take a look at. And we will touch on some of the other adaptations from different times of M.R. James' work. And, of course, we will talk about some surrounding issues and about M.R. James himself.
Okay.
And because we are using James as the focal point for this particular discussion, we'll start with a little bit about him. So Montague Rhodes James lived from 1862 to 1936. He was born in Kent, but actually brought up on the Suffolk coast, which features in many of his stories. So big rural houses and rural parts of Suffolk are very common. He was educated at King's College at Cambridge, so he was quite an educated man. He was a scholar and an academic studying medieval texts.
That's right. I mean, he was a full-time academic throughout his life and career, really, because he stayed on at Cambridge. First of all, he was a don, and then he went on to be provost of King's College in Cambridge. And then later on, he would move to be provost of Eton College, which is one of the very famous schools in England. And he continued his studies throughout, I think. But he also had a fine talent for writing and telling ghost stories. And I believe that his tales about ghostly goings-on and the supernatural were very popular with his students, both at Cambridge and at Eton. And his sort of dramatic readings that he would do, especially at Christmas time, were extremely popular. And I think they led to several people encouraging him to write down his ghost stories. And so he published several collections of ghost stories, which is a sort of, like, I suppose, a side project to his in-depth academic work on medieval religious texts, which you mentioned, Brian.
I think it was relatively common at one time for British academics to have a sort of thriving sideline doing something else, often writing. It was also the case with J.R.R. Tolkien, that he was an academic and wrote as a sideline. So this was something that a number of people did at different times, and certainly M.R. James was one of them.
Yeah. So he brought out his first collection of ghost stories in 1904, which was called Ghost Stories of an Antiquary. He had another volume published in 1911 called simply More Ghost Stories. And then in 1919, A Thin Ghost and Other Stories. And then his final collection was called A Warning to the Curious and Other Stories. And that was published in 1925. Although I think over the years, all his various stories have been published and republished in a variety of collections, including complete collections of all his stories. And his stories often, I suppose appropriately for an academic, they often feature academics as characters in the stories themselves. Usually academics who, as the title of one of his collections suggests, were rather curious and investigating various aspects, and their researches often lead them into the supernatural, or into conflict with the supernatural, I suppose. And interestingly enough, these encounters often take place in parts of the East Anglian coast of Britain, which, as you mentioned, Brian, was where James was brought up and he returned to several times in his stories over the years.
M.R. James had a very original and different style for the time. Of course, now that so many years have passed, he seems to be an element of classic or old-style ghost stories. But it was quite new at the time, and they tended to involve very sort of direct conflicts with the supernatural that were much more physical and corporeal than the ghost stories that had preceded them. And they were very influential and have been popular for more than a century and have many fans and of course have been adapted, as we'll be talking here, but have been adapted many times on radio, on television, and on film as well. And of course, in the tradition that he started, it is fairly popular for M.R. James stories to be read out loud in public as well.
Absolutely. Ghostly readings of his work are extremely popular still, and we'll be talking about some of them as we go along.
In 1972, the BBC broadcast their annual Ghost Story for Christmas series. They were doing these once a year, and in 72, it was A Warning to the Curious. It was a 50-minute film. It was adapted from the story of the same name that featured in A Warning to the Curious and Other Stories from 1925. It was striking in a number of ways, and it was, I believe, quite popular at the time.
Yes, I think it was very well received. It's about a character called Paxton, who was played by an extremely well-known British television and film actor called Peter Vaughan, who normally plays quite sort of dark, villainous characters, but here he's the sort of hero of the story, as it were. And he was he's portrayed as an amateur archaeologist who travels to the east of England to investigate the legend of the three lost crowns of Anglia. And I think we learn fairly early on that two of those crowns may already have been found or destroyed, and that leaves only one hidden crown. And there's a legend about this crown that if it is removed, something terrible will happen to that part of the country. And as such, there may be some form of protection guarding this crown. But he's interested in it from a sort of archaeological point of view and trying to find it. And of course, his curiosity and his investigations lead on to the rest of the story.
That's right. And there are some very tense moments and some great moments that it leads into. The legend of the three crowns involved this idea that the three crowns had been buried to prevent invasion from overseas. And because of this, there was one family that was guarding the crown, and a certain member of the family would always know where this crown was hidden and would protect it and guard it. But all of the members of that family are now dead, and there may be references to where one of them had been guarding it. So there are clues to where this crown might actually be buried. And Paxton goes into some investigation and digging into various things, and seeing where it leads him, and there are some unforeseen consequences there, and that is part of what leads to the interesting things in this story.
Yes, and it's difficult to, you know, to go on without giving too much away, but it is a good story and it's well told, and as you say, his investigations will lead on to some rather nasty and dark happenings as he sort of comes up against the supernatural aspects of the legend. So it's quite good stuff.
And that coming to an unfortunate end, or at least unfortunate results of pursuing something that has a supernatural aspect to it, that seems to be thematic in M.R. James' work.
Absolutely. As we've said, the academic who looks into things that he perhaps shouldn't do and then perhaps finds his reward is not quite how he expected it to be. Unpleasantness usually ensues.
Yes, the word antiquarian comes up, it seems, much more frequently in M.R. James' stories than almost anywhere else.
I take it that is where your interests lie. As an antiquarian, I mean.
Yes, sir. I'm an amateur. You, know the legend well.
Yes, they say two crowns were lost. But there was a local family who claimed to know where the third was buried. In times of war, the oldest male would watch to see that it remained unmolested. The last surviving member of the family took the duty upon himself throughout the 4 years of the Great War. It became an obsession with him, poor fellow. He haunted the spot night and day.
So you mentioned, Brian, that this was the BBC Ghost Story for Christmas series. And the official series with that title began in 1971, and it carried on until 1978. And in fact, the first 5 years were all M.R. James adaptations. And this was the second one, A Warning to the Curious, and as we say, 1972.
Lawrence Gordon Clark produced, directed, and wrote many of these ghost story adaptations, including this one. And did some good work and some popular work for it. It was shot on 16mm film, and it has that film look to it with a fairly early BBC color process, and that adds to a mysterious and slightly off, just slightly surreal look and feel to it.
Yeah, the colour is interesting, Brian. It's a slightly sort of washed out colour, it seems to me. But as you say, it does give it this slightly unusual and creepy edge to it as well. It looks quite good.
Yes, it might not have been quite as washed out in the original broadcast, because that does sometimes happen with some stocks of film as they age. But it certainly had a slightly heightened or surreal quality, just because there was something not quite right about the colors, especially the sky color and things like that.
Yes, that's interesting, because it did work well. Partly, I think, as well, because they shot on location on the East Anglian coast. So again, you get this very sort of flat landscape with big sky and the sea, and quite a bleak outlook, really. It's not overly populated with people. In fact, the film has a very small cast who are very well used, but for a large part, it's Peter Vaughan playing this character Paxton on his own, carrying out his investigations and occasionally coming up against perhaps just one other figure in this landscape. And that all adds to the sort of feeling of sort of slightly surreal and slightly spooky, I suppose, Brian.
Yes, for sure.
Amongst the small cast was Clive Swift playing a doctor on holiday. Interestingly, a doctor who was concentrating on painting landscapes. And at times, this weird colour that we've mentioned almost gives me the feeling that the whole film looks a bit like landscape painting. There's certainly long shots where it looks like a picture.
Yes, that's true. I think of the three adaptations that we're looking at here, I think A Warning to the Curious is probably the most faithful to the original.
Yes, I think so. It sticks very closely to the story.
It varies in a few ways, mostly in that the original is told in such a way that it's one person telling a story that a second person told him, and most of that story is him telling a person that a third person had told him. Which is a little bit confusing, and of course they lost those layers.
Yes.
But aside from, and they added the part that the Doctor character was painting, and they stepped away from the all of the golf that was involved in the original. But it was, in most respects, quite faithful to the original short story.
Yeah, very good. I think Clive Swift's Doctor character also turned up in some other of the BBC M.R. James stories from the 1970s. But we see him here, obviously, as you say, as this painting doctor on his holiday, who's a sort of observer and witness to the things that are going on.
Oh, interesting. So he lent something just slightly thematic to the Christmas ghost stories on the BBC.
I think so. He's in at least one other as the same character, though I think he may be mostly as a narrator. But I know he crops up somewhere else. And I think that Tony on our Facebook site pointed that out for me.
Ah, yes. And A Warning to the Curious, of course, was broadcast on Christmas Eve of 1972.
Which, interestingly, Brian, was the night before the Stone Tape was broadcast for the first time. So quite a creepy couple of nights on British television.
That must have been one spooky Christmas in the UK.
So we jump forward 7 years now to discuss Casting the Runes, which was an ITV production, part of a very long-running series of plays called the ITV Playhouse series, which had a number of seasons from 1967 through to 1982. In 1979, we get this 50-minute adaptation of the story Casting the Runes, so the same title, but quite a contemporary adaptation of the M.R. James story, as we'll discuss. And it starred a very popular TV actress at the time called Jan Francis, who had just come from a very successful program called Secret Army, which had a major part in British TV history.
And she plays a television journalist called Prudence Dunning, who produces, we hear at the beginning of the show, produced this documentary about paranormal hoaxes and interviewed people and talked to a bunch of people about different things. But the one person that she couldn't talk to, the one person who was not available, was a man called Carswell, who considers himself the Abbot of Lufford. He's not a real abbot. But this strange man, Carswell, who had written a book about the supernatural and witchcraft that she had quoted in the documentary, but she was not able to talk to him. And Carswell, in this story, becomes a major character, and he is played by yet another British Invaders favorite, Ian Cuthbertson. We talked about Ian Cuthbertson when we talked about The Stone Tape and when we talked about Children of the Stones. And Ian Cuthbertson is here as well, and has a fairly brief performance as Carswell. You don't see him that often or for that long in terms of the scenes, but he did bring it off very well. And I should mention that sadly Ian Cuthbertson died quite recently,
which is a sad loss to us all, because he was a fantastic television actor, and we've said this before, but whenever he turns up, he just dominates the screen, partly because he's so tall and imposing. But there was a real air of menace to all his performances. And again, he's imposing and menacing here. Although, as you say, he's got a fairly brief appearance as Carswell. But he certainly leaves his mark on this production. Very notable.
Yes, there are not that many scenes where Carswell shows up. He's in several, but he doesn't have that much screen time. And given that they had reduced Carswell to having so little screen time, it was nice to see that they chose Ian Cuthbertson for the role, because he's, I think, one of the few actors who could really bring that off well and be so imposing with it, with not that much to work with in terms of screen time or script.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he, you know, as you say, he has shorter screen time, but a big presence because it's Ian Cuthbertson. And we know how threatening and menacing and spooky he can be. And his character, Carswell, feels that he's been criticised by Prudence Dunning in this television show that she's made about him and about his sort of paranormal interests. And he reacts badly to this criticism, and we get the impression as things move on that he has set some form of curse on this television journalist, Prudence Dunning, which is how the story sort of moves on.
Yes, that's right. And a lot of the story is about her investigating what is going on, what's happening to her, and she discovers that there was a death, a previous victim years earlier, who had also criticized Carswell and suffered the fate that perhaps has been chosen for her, and it looks like her time is running out. So there is some interesting stuff going on there. It's quite tense.
Yes, it is, and it gets more tense as it goes on, as she realizes what's happening, and as you say, that she's got a deadline because time is running out for her. And she has to use some of her skills as a journalist to find out what's happening. So it's good stuff. Another very tense 50 minutes of British television.
It introduces this idea of casting the runes, which is the curse that Carswell puts on Dunning, which is the idea that you can have a specially written piece of paper or parchment that giving to someone, handing it to someone directly, then places this curse and sets this doom on this person. And the only way to reverse it is to hand it back to the person who originally gave it and, in effect, reverse things, undo that curse. And the key is that it must be handed over and taken willingly in some form. And that is something that is a very interesting concept in Casting the Runes that has been influential and has shown up in different forms in different other programs.
Yes, it, as you say, it's one of the big parts of it, and the sort of central character at first won't believe it, and then things will happen as the story progresses that make the central character realize there's some truth to it. And as you say, brings in this this deadline aspect, which, you know, gives us sort of the drama and tension.
Yes.
Now, there's a chapter devoted to a charming little activity called Casting the Runes. Harrington told me that from the brief glimpse he'd had of the slip of paper, it looked as if the writing on it was in runic characters.
Casting the Runes? What does it mean?
Well, some sort of spell, I suppose, or curse. You write it on a piece of paper, hand it personally to your victim, and within a specified time, the victim's dead.
Now, this one was adapted by Clive Exton and directed by, again, Lawrence Gordon Clark. But this one is quite different in how it was adapted. We're now over in ITV territory rather than BBC territory. And the approach they took, which is different than most of the BBC adaptations I've seen, is that they modernized it. So they brought it from an old sort of Victorian ghost story into a modern ghost story.
Yes, that's right. They bring it sort of bang up to date in 1979. Although to give us a certain ghost story feel to it, it did happen to be filmed in a very snowy England. So it sort of goes along with that sort of wintry Christmas aspect we've seen from the other BBC adaptations. And some of the shots outside are quite sort of memorable and spooky, scenes of buildings and England sort of gripped by snow are quite good. Otherwise, it shifts indoors to television sets. And unfortunately, one or two of them do look rather like sets and didn't quite have the impact of some of the other shots, I thought. It does have, most of it, I think, is done by suggestion. It does have one sort of rather creepy special effect, which might be a slightly dodgy special effect, depending on what you feel about it. certainly what's happening to the character of Prudence is quite unpleasant, but the special effect has its sort of wobbly Doctor Who moments.
Yes, that was a little weak, but it's also quite brief. You don't see it for very long. Some of the visuals and the sets and things, you're right, are limited. It's a little dated in that way. But what makes this one is the performances. The other two, like Warning to the Curious, are more about atmosphere and being creepy and having this historical look to it. Well, Casting the Runes was done as a much more character and performance driven type of piece.
And it's it has a larger cast. There's more characters in there for us to get used to as well. And as you say, more interaction between the characters. Certainly with Warning to the Curious, and when we talk about the other film, Whistle and I'll Come to You, they're very sort of solitary pieces in a way, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
And I should mention, in my continuing goal to find British Invaders connections, that in Casting the Runes, you'll find a very brief blink and you might miss it performance by David Calder, who would go on to be in Star Cops, which Brian and Xander covered in one of the early editions of British Invaders.
That's right. He was very good as the lead character in Star Cops. And here in Casting the Runes, he was also good. It was a little appearance in one scene, but it worked well. He was good, as most of the acting in this was pretty strong.
It's a good cast. You know, Jan Francis is very good. Ian Cuthbertson obviously is excellent. Jan Francis's boss at the television studio, Bernard Gallagher, is always very dependable. So it is a good cast.
Yes, it's a nice little production. One thing worth noting, as I mentioned a little bit before, this adaptation did change quite a bit from the original story. So we talked about them modernizing it. They also changed the character of Dunning from a man to a woman. So that was certainly a significant change. And in updating it, there were a number of things they changed in different places. And the role for Carswell was reduced quite a bit. They made it quite a brief appearance, where I think in the original story it was a little fuller.
Yes.
And there were some story changes as well, more so than in the BBC adaptations.
But it is a very interesting adaptation. And as you say, it works quite well as a cast piece, and very much brought up to date and modernised, and an interesting play from ITV.
Yes, a nice little standalone show.
So that will conclude our discussion from the first part. Next time, please come back and join us, because we've got to discuss another M.I. James adaptation. That's the BBC film Whistle and I'll Come to You from 1968.
And we'll also talk about some other adaptations of James' work on radio and television, of course, and on film as well.
And we'll get to our recommendations of which of these films we think you should watch and how you can watch them.
We definitely have some more interesting stuff to talk about these adaptations and the work of M.R. James.
Absolutely.
You can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at www.BritishInvaders.com. We have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find us there.
And if you'd like to drop by the Facebook group and tell us what you think of us covering three shows in one, we'd be very interested to have your comments on that.
Yes, absolutely. Or email us. We'd love to hear what you think about this type of format of covering three one-off shows like this. So thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yep. Thank you very much. Please join us next time. This is Eamon from England saying goodbye.